Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, which means it's time for another edition of the HTXT.Africast. This week, we are not in studio. We are actually in various different places. But joining me on the line this week is Nick Cowan.
Hello.
And Clinton Matos.
That's me. Hello, everybody.
How are you guys doing?
Really good, actually. I'm sitting in a nicely well-lit house with, you know, sun rays streaming through the windows. It's lovely.
I'm in a little bricked up corner. The place by my desk is, it gets no sun, it gets no wind, it's isolated. I hope that's good for sound, at least.
Yeah, it does sound really good. And I am surrounded by windows and a fan, which is great.
Flipping end of year South African heat.
Yes, and the December heat here in Gauteng is quite something else. So let's not waste any time. Nick, what have you been doing this week?
Well, it was what's this week. It was the end of last week. I was playing a game called L.A. Noir. As you might know, it's quite an old game, but it's just been remastered for current-gen hardware, I suppose. I don't know. Have either of you ever played it?
I have not. I've watched about 2 hours of it on a stream once just because I was interested, and a guy I follow named Northern Line, he was streaming it, so I thought I'd check it out. It looks cool, not my cup of tea, I'd say.
Well, you see, the thing is, it's a weird one because it's a very weird game to be released in this window, because it's like this is the Christmas window, so usually the publishers pump out their, like, the sequels of their biggest IPs. Like, you have the Star Wars Battlefront, Assassin's Creed Origins, Call of Duty, you know, stuff like that. And a lot of them are very, very kind of like traditional games, like, you know, I mean, Super Mario Odyssey, while it's incredibly well made and incredibly well structured, you're not really going to be bowled over by, left of the dial gameplay in it. Same thing with Call of Duty, same thing with Assassin's Creed Origins. And L.A. Noir is essentially it's a sandbox game published by Rockstar, but it's about as far away from Grand Theft Auto as you can possibly get. You actually lose points for wrecking your car or driving like a maniac or accidentally hitting a pedestrian. And most of the game is involved with working cases. There's a couple of foot chases and a couple of car chases, and there's a couple of gunfights here and there, but mainly you go around crime scenes looking at evidence, collecting clues, and eventually interviewing suspects, and watching their eyebrows waggle and their faces tick in order to tell whether or not they're lying. So it's not exactly what you'd call a traditional sandbox game. So that's what I think. It's a little bit weird for it to be released at a time when publishers are really after your wallet.
Why have they released it now, though, is my question. I mean, it's how old is this?
I have a theory. Isn't it because it also came out on the Switch?
Oh, that's true. It did come out on the Switch. That could be an idea as to why they released it. How old is it? It was first released in 2011. So it's over half a decade old. And even though it's been given a bit of a spit and polish in the visual department, you're not gonna mistake this game for a current gen title. Like it looks quite last gen. The main thing about it that made it stand out at the time was the fact that Rockstar and the developer team Bondi were working with this firm called Depth Analysis, who had developed this 360-degree facial motion capture technology called, I think it was called Motion Sense, and essentially it allowed them to capture nearly every facial tick and eye movement of the actors who were who star in the game, and that kind of dovetails into the mechanic I was talking about, which is like you're supposed to read facial expressions for tells to see when someone's lying to you or just withholding the truth, which isn't necessarily the same thing.
I like.
Yeah,
I've seen some video where The actors kind of had to ham it up a bit just so it comes across in a video game. Mm. And I've seen a lot of videos where it's like, L.O. Noir is a game about reading subtle facial expressions. And then you see a guy like pulling a really overacted, hammy face. And then there's that big X button that says doubt.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think it was pushing the limits of what was capable at the time. The other thing that made it stand out was the plot. And the plot's really good. You basically play this guy called Cole Phelps, who's come back from the war as a decorated hero, and he starts his career in the LAPD in the late 40s and gradually works his way up through the ranks. And you know, he works different cases. So he works on the traffic desk and the homicide desk and vice and then arson. And basically, like, the different desks, I suppose, they each have a case, and each case could be looked at as a bottle episode, but there's this overarching narrative about what Phelps did over in the war, and also what happened to his former comrades in arms when they got back to Los Angeles. And the next thing you know, some military grade morphine starts hitting the streets, and then, you know, the two narratives start to intertwine with each other, which is really, really well done. I mean, you can spot the influences of this game a lot. I mean, you know, there's one plot point that feels like it's taken out of Chinatown. There's another one that feels like it's taken out of L.A. Confidential. In fact, James Ellroy, in general, his kind of shadow looms large over the whole thing. But you know, they don't. You never feel as though this is a ripoff of those things. It's more of an assimilation of their influences. And the dialogue's very snappy, and the characters are really well drawn. It just gives you a sense of the fact that there was this city, Los Angeles, that is supposedly so filled with hope, but in actual fact is as corrupt as the day is long, and people who are involved in law enforcement can't escape that corruption. It's really, really good. I really enjoyed it.
And do you think that people should buy it if they've never played L.A. Noir, like me? Do you think it's worth a buy?
Yeah, I think it's worth a buy. If you're hard up for cash this Christmas, I would wait until it comes down in price. But it is kind of like required reading now. I mean, it's one of those games that stands out like BioShock or perhaps a better example would be Brutal Legend. It's kind of like, well, you know, it didn't do anything particularly incredibly new, but what it did do that was innovative was really, really fun. I'd say, and if you own it on a Switch, I'd really love to hear what from our readers, and if you manage to get a copy for Clinton, what it's like on the Switch, because it is the sort of game that you could literally take to bed with the Switch and read it and have it as you know, your bedtime reading sort of thing.
Okay,
it's really, really good. It's basically, if you imagine, it's the closest you'll get to starring in a hard-boiled thriller like L.A. Confidential or The Black Dahlia.
Awesome. That actually sounds like something that might be fun for the December break, actually. Something you can invest a lot of time in and play through, get the whole story.
And lose yourself in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if this new edition is available on Steam. So I'm looking on Steam, I can only see the original. I think the new edition is only for console, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm sure that there will be a version coming out. But what makes this different from the version that came out a few years ago, well, say a few years ago, nearly 6 years ago, is the fact that, okay, obviously, like, all the DLC missions are included in it, which is I think makes more sense in general, just because originally when you played the game, you'd play it, finish it, download the DLC, and then find yourself going back in the timeline of the plot to an earlier time when you might still be on Homicide or you might still be on Vice, and you're going, all right, well, I finished this game, I know where it's going, but now we go back to this mission. Whereas now, of course, because they're all in there, you can play it in totally chronological order. The other thing that's quite cool about it is that I think we did as well down here when L.A. Noir came out, got slightly stiffed, because there was a couple of missions which were only available in North America if you had pre-ordered this game through GameStop. So even if you were prepared to buy the DLC, there was content you were missing. But those missions are also in it as well. So this is like we said, if you've never played it before, this is the best version to have. It's the full fat, nothing withheld LA Noire version that really I think should have been released at launch. But hey, at least it didn't come with loot crates.
Yet different facial expressions in each loot crate.
Well, you laugh, but if you do sign up to the Rockstar Antisocial Club, you get a different suit. So,
yeah. Rockstar Antisocial Club.
Jeez, truly, truly compelling content.
Well, I'd like to say that all the best content is the story and how you and how the plot develops. And I'll tell you something, I have been watching so many film noir films since I was playing LA Noire because it reminded me of how much love I've got for that genre. In the last weekend or the last week, I've watched Chinatown again. I've watched LA Confidential again. I've watched The Black Dahlia. I'm looking around for another one, so we'll see.
But yeah, do you have any suggestions for Nick? Slap him in the comments.
Please do. Speaking of let's say shady practices and intrigue, something bad happened with Apple today, didn't it, Brendan?
Well, it's not just today. It's kind of a trend that seems to be following Apple, and I kind of feel sorry for them. But at the same time, how much can you really pity a company like Apple? So let's go over what happened today, and then we'll go back. So today, or late last night rather, somebody found a really worrying security flaw in Mac OS High Sierra version 10.13. So this bug essentially allows you to open up an authentication dial box, type in the username root, and then leave the password field blank, hit enter, and then click on the unlock button a couple of times. And all of a sudden, you've got root access to the machine that's running macOS High Sierra. So that's problematic because anybody could walk up to an unattended Mac, type in root, hit enter, and then click unlock a few times and have complete access to your MacBook, let's say. I do believe that iMacs also run on macOS, so those would also be vulnerable. So this is a really trivial little flaw, but the big concern at the moment is that it can be remotely executed. So with a bit of code, somebody could execute this flaw and gain access to your MacBook remotely. Apple is working on a fix, but this is really worrying because it's such a small little thing. You would have thought that it would have been tested in QA.
Mm.
Or am I mistaken in that?
Jeez, feels like something that you would hope so.
You would hope so.
Well, no, I see what you're saying. It's basically like this is not some small little glitch. Mm. This is something that is now released into the wild that compromises your entire machine, which, like, you know, at the very base level makes loading ransomware onto it a cinch.
Yeah.
And surely these... This bug or this hole, this chink in your armor should have really been addressed before they went, oh, okay, here you go. Oh, don't worry, we'll patch it in a minute.
Yeah. But
no, you should have spotted this, patched it, and then sent it out. I don't know if this is related at all, but like when you said that this is part of a worrying trend with Apple, I was cursing Apple's name at the weekend because I – downloaded a patch that Apple basically was like, you need to download this for your OS. So I downloaded it and then restarted my machine, and then several lines of code pitched up and it said, your Mac can't be started, try restarting it. And essentially I was just stuck in this loop. So I had to go to the Apple store and they said, yes, the download didn't install properly. We can do that for you here. I was like, okay, great. Yeah, that'll be $450.
What?
And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, that's 450 rand. I said, let me get this straight. I download this patch from the App Store, not from some, you know, malware site or some dodgy online store. I download it from your store, the App Store. Okay, it bricks my machine. And now basically Apple want me to pay to fix a machine that its software has bricked. And it's like, yeah, that's it. I said, how does that work? And he said,
sounds like Apple to me.
And here's the thing: the guy behind the counter was really, really nice. It's like, well, you have to understand, we're not Apple Direct; we're the Apple Store. I was like, what does that mean? And are you telling me the Apple Store doesn't make any money off the off the work you do and charge for people at the Genius Bar? You know, and it's like, and that's the thing: I want to get a hold of someone at Apple to explain this, because I didn't want to give this guy like guff about this, because he's got enough guff in his life already. Okay, he's working in retail, which is no fun. And, you know, most of his clients are snippy, very wealthy Apple owners going, why does this not work? Hey, do you know how much money I spent on this? Do you understand? Right, this is unacceptable. You know, so I don't want to pound onto this guy's misery, but I do want an answer from Apple on this. Like, why are you forcing me to pay to fix something you broke? Anyway.
So, like I said,
it's part of a worrying trend.
So there is a way that you can activate a root password. The root user account and password are disabled by default in High Sierra. We'll stick a link at the bottom of this podcast, which contains another link to an Apple guide that will tell you how to set a password. Just don't forget that root password, because it is the fail-safe access to your MacBook should anything go wrong, essentially, with your account. So there is a guide on how to save it, but until you have changed that password and until Apple has patched High Sierra, and hopefully that patch doesn't brick your machine like poor Nick experienced, we would recommend not leaving your MacBook unattended at all, even in an office where you trust everybody. People are funny beings. But as
and
I said,
especially
this is
not in a. Sorry, I was what? Just going to say, especially not in a trendy cafe.
Yeah, you know, these coffee shops that people frequent and work on their screenplays that never make it to the screen. Anyway, so about the worrying trendness of this. So earlier this week, a Vietnamese security firm called Beecave. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, it should. They were the company that used a 3D printed mask and 3D prints of a person's eyes to fool Face ID, which is the security system that's in the iPhone X, which landed in South Africa last week, Friday. So if you have an iPhone X, I would urge you to take this really seriously. So Beecav now has made a second version of the mask that they used to crack Face ID. This mask was printed with something called stone. What is it called? It's like a stony material that resembles a human's face more closely. Stone powder, that's what it's called. They use that due to its resemblance to human skin. And then they printed, what are they called? Infrared images of the user's eyes and placed those over the mask. And what do you know? The iPhone X opens up the moment that it's placed in front of this person's eyes. There's a video that shows how this company did it. Basically, they wiped the Face ID data from the phone and then set up a new Face ID, and this mask opened it in a couple of seconds. So this is very, very worrying. And the biggest reason that it's worrying is that getting a 3D printed model of a face is not as tricky as people might think. Essentially, what Beecav said is that you could set up a couple of cameras located at different angles in a room, and when somebody walks in, you snap a picture of them from these different angles, and creating a 3D model from there is kind of trivial. Of course, this actually means that somebody would need to go in, like, let's say in the trendy coffee shop you're in, they would need to have, say, three cameras set up at different angles, snap a photo of you that's high definition enough to be able to make a 3D model, and then take your phone. That seems really like a lot of work, like a lot of work. But it kind of shows that Face ID is not as secure as Apple was making it out to be. Just recently we wrote a story about how siblings or like your offspring are able to open your iPhone because their faces resemble yours, and Apple kind of operates within a margin of error with Face ID and goes, okay, well, this kind of looks like this person, so I'm going to unlock it and then save this data. And if I use it again, I'll refer back to this data, but after a while, I'll just delete it. But it is really worrying, especially since Apple was like, oh, we've removed the fingerprint sensor because this is way more secure. Evidently, it's not. And maybe they should have kept the fingerprint sensor, maybe taken a Huawei or an LG page and put it at the back of the handset, which is the correct place for a fingerprint sensor, if any manufacturers are listening. But yeah, it's kind of worrying that this company that used to be the bedrock of InfoSec is in the headlines so often with security breaches and having their security systems cracked.
Yeah.
And they'll charge you for it.
Nick, like you are an Apple user. I mean, you use an iPhone, you use a Mac. Like, how does this make you feel? Yeah, do you kind of feel like maybe Apple is not the way to go anymore?
I don't know if it's not the way to go. I mean, the thing is that buying a laptop these days is a nosebleed anyway. And one of the things I do appreciate about the MacBook I have is that I've had it for nearly 7 years and it's still quite good. What worries me about this stuff is that there's this kind of laissez-faire, oh well, whatever happens, happens kind of attitude, where huge cracks are starting to appear in the security. And the thing is, right, that like I think now more than ever before, like security and being secure and having your data secure. I mean, how many stories this year alone have we seen of you know, data breaches and, you know, the massive data leak wasn't even a breach the other couple of months ago. You know, ransomware installed on tons and tons of devices around the world. I mean, you have a group called the Shadow Brokers who are essentially handing out NSA software to crack into people, and you're going and at this time when this is all going on, this is your approach to putting out updates for your laptops and possibly and into your new phones, which are going to be used, let's be honest, by millions and millions and millions of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think has Microsoft dropped the ball like this year?
I think everybody's kind of had their own sort of breach this year. I think it's kind of Apple is that company that you trust to be secure, and now there seems to be this influx of, I don't know, maybe it's just the case of you have the biggest stick, so everybody's trying to get into your house. You know, I think it might be that. And yeah, I mean, Windows has had its own issues. I mean, we saw with the WannaCry ransomware, the huge gaping security holes that were left in things like Windows XP and Windows 7 that people are still using. And yeah, I think it's just a case of, oh, we believe we are so secure, and that kind of paints a target on your back. That's my opinion of it, at least. I still think that things like iOS are probably more secure than Android. I still believe that wholeheartedly until I'm proven wrong. And let's make this clear, the issues with the iPhone X are purely related to the Face ID system. I don't think that the software underneath of iOS is balked at all. But yeah, I think this is a case of we have the biggest stick and now everybody's knocking on our door. It is just worrying. As we approach the festive season, news like being able to log into your MacBook with root worries me. As a potential buyer. But that's not to say that Windows is more inherently secure. I don't think it is. But yeah, I think it is cause for concern, and I think that Apple needs to address these issues perhaps a lot faster. I mean, they have said that they are working on a patch for this problem, but I think that they need to be more conscious of this stuff than ever before, because the general populace is more aware of this stuff than ever before.
It also highlights another sort of what's the word I'm looking for? it highlights, I think, a general problem in tech anyway, in that the idea, like, okay, so here's the thing. You buy yourself a computer or you buy yourself a laptop, right? These days, if you're working in media or like, you know, for just most people, like, you know, you'll need a smartphone. Most people in this country access the internet through a smartphone, right? You got our number one destination in this country, at least, as was revealed by Google's consumer report this last month, basically said the first destination for most South Africans is a social media site like Facebook or Twitter or something like that. And it's like, as Nick Hall pointed out when we interviewed him with the data leak a couple of months ago, he said, what's shocking is how many people just give their data away.
Yeah.
They just hand it out willy-nilly. And it's like going, you know, maybe the attitude of these tech giant companies are like, oh, what do we care? You know, and if you're a hacker, sort it out. It's like, what are you going to do? Stop using your MacBook? You're not going to stop using your MacBook. What are you going to do? Switch to a Google phone? You're not going to switch to a Google phone.
Switch
you
know? To Linux. I mean, it's like, no one's going to do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Go for Linux, but then you have to actually, you know, put some effort in to learn how it works. And that's the thing, is that technology has been built so conveniently. There is so and the giants of this industry are so kind of like, you know, there's relatively few of them, and it's kind of like, well, go to our competitor. You still have the same problem. We'll give you a patch as and when. See ya. By the way, all of our money's in an offshore tax haven. See you later. You know, it is. You just kind of get that. You know, now that they've got you, you know, now that they've converted you, especially because Apple is like, you know, a company like Blizzard. People will literally sit in the rain in places like London and New York waiting for that phone to become available so they can run in and buy it.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. Maybe it's an attitude that engenders a certain kind of laissez-faire attitude on the part of the developers. Of course, they'd never admit that because, you know, that I don't think any games or tech company wants that much horrible truth to get out all at once.
Yeah.
I mean, that the only sort of – the most truthful thing that was said in the games and tech industry this year was when GameStop turned around in America and said, oh, you like the look of this mission in Assassin's Creed Origins? Yeah, you can't have it unless you pay your money up front.
On to something a bit more positive, I think. Clinton, there's some games coming to the Switch, are there?
Well, they're already out. Oh, no, I lie. Okay, so the first one is Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2. So It actually is out on consoles and PC. Be out on the Switch on the 1st. Now, I played the Switch version, and not the best first impressions because I started it up. I played for exactly 2 minutes, and then I was like, oh, this is the same Lego game I've been playing for the last 5 years or more.
Is it a game in which you knock things over and build things and button bash and just run around, and occasionally there's this platforming, but it's quite cute?
Yes, it's. Oh. I can't believe it. You know, every year there's Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or like a Telltale game, and it comes out and everyone's like, oh, this is the same game. There's no innovation. But man, no one talks about it with the Lego games. I cannot believe how little they change every year. So,
It's very much a case of like, but the difference between this Lego game and that Lego game is in this one you can ride a pig, whereas that one you can use Indiana Jones.
Yeah, basically. The only difference between like last year it was a Star Wars Lego game. The only thing they really added to that was like two sections with a really simple third-person shooting mechanic, which really actually just played out like a turret section with this, which the series has had for a hell of a long time. So I didn't know what to do with this game because I wanted to write something about it. But I thought, did someone sneeze?
No, I coughed.
Okay, well, then you don't get a bless you. So I thought maybe I was being a little bit too cynical, maybe. So I invited my nephew over. He's 7. The age restriction for the game is 7, so it worked out perfectly. And we played for a little bit. You know, the Switch is really good for that because you've got 2 controllers in one, basically. And he has tiny hands, so he doesn't get cramped like I do. And we played it, and he told me that the puzzles were actually a little bit difficult, and the combat was fun, and he had a good time, which was the polar opposite to me. So I don't know. Maybe I've just aged out of this game, the series. Maybe I'm too cynical and old at the old age of 22 to enjoy these games anymore. Yeah, I wish they would actually innovate in the series. It's getting tiresome now.
It could be just a, I mean, I think maybe one day when you have kids of your own and they first start playing video games, maybe then you could come back to the series. Because, like, if you've got a little child in your life and you're a father and you want a game that the pair of you can play together, Lego is brilliant for that, because kids, like your nephew, for example, loved it, thought it was great, you know?
Yeah, two problems with that, though. Sorry, not to cut you off. I just want to point out this problem before I forget it. One, they don't have that dynamic split screen anymore. I don't know if you remember. I think it was the Indiana Jones Lego game. They introduced it. If the two characters in split screen are near each other, it's no longer split screen. It becomes one big screen where you can see both characters. They don't have that anymore. It's always split screen, which is disappointing. And also, sure, I understand what you're saying, but there are a lot of like multiplayer games like Mario Kart, which I would enjoy playing as well as a little kid. So I don't think that's a really good excuse that they'll enjoy it, because, you know, I want to have fun too if I'm going to be playing a game for any reason, even if it's just to entertain someone younger than me.
So in other words, unless you're pestered by your nephew to play it again, you won't. And could we please have something like, you know, Lego Knife Fight or something like that?
Well, no. Like, I think it was last year, the year before, we got Lego Worlds, which was kind of like Lego Minecraft, and that was really fun. And that's not a full price game. I think it's a $30 game, and it's like 400 or 500 Rand, and it's on the Switch. If you want a Lego game on the Switch or any platform, I really do recommend Worlds instead of any of the other entries. So that was the first game I'm going to get through. That I put the most time into that. These next two only showed up yesterday or the day before, so I haven't put that much time into them. It's the Doom port, the Doom 2016 port for the Nintendo Switch.
Now, I've heard that – sorry, Clinton, to interrupt you, but I've heard that the graphics on that game have been downgraded substantially, given that the – I suppose that's due to the Switch's limitations.
Yeah, so – first of all, it's absolutely bizarre playing this on the Switch because, I mean, it is Doom.
Yeah.
You boot it up, and I'll get to the like concessions they had to make that happen, but it's really bizarre. Like, you could walk around and play 2016 Doom. But it is... They say... Okay, so the developers say 720p at 30 frames per second. Even if it is 720p... every setting is turned down so low that that resolution doesn't matter anymore because everything is so low res. It feels like the game at all times is out of focus. That's how bad the like texturing is and all of that. At some points, like it's too dark or it's too blurry that you'll actually miss enemies. And the only way you'll see them is if they use an attack that creates like a lighting effect. They really had it turned down. And I mean, I can understand why. I mean, come on. It's a brand new game. It was a triple A game from last year. It's running on a tablet, essentially.
Yeah.
But coming from PC, the biggest problem I had isn't the graphics. The biggest problem I had was the controls. Mm. Now, I have tried to play Doom with a controller, 2016 Doom. And it was fine, but going to the Nintendo Switch has been a real like learning curve and adjustment. I'm probably 4 hours into the game, and I still don't feel like I'm in control of everything. It's a combination of the aiming not being. It's very hard to figure out on the Nintendo Switch for one reason or another with the joystick. The joystick is so small, and I don't think they did a great job getting that working properly. And the controls are so cramped that after about 40 minutes, especially my left hand, which is doing moving, which in Doom you do a lot of, my left hand gets really uncomfortable to the point where I basically have to stop or switch from handheld mode into a tabletop mode with the charging grip. So there's a lot of problems. It's still really good, though. It's just that... Here's the thing, right? The big draw here is that if you really like Doom, you can now play Doom on the go. The problem there is you're going to have to deal with these massive downgrades. You're going to have to deal with the worse controls. The controls are just worse, even compared to console. And if you say, sure, you could use a pro controller, if you're going to sit down and play Doom at your home on your couch, you might as well get it on console or PC. The only reason I can see getting it on the Switch is to play it on the go or to play it like on your bed. So you cannot tell me use the Pro Controller instead, because that defeats the purpose of buying it on this platform. And the second problem is also with the platform. This game is being sold at full price. Now, a lot of people are going to disagree with me. I don't think it should have come out at full price because it's older. It may not be a big of an issue because it's only 1 year old, but that will be a problem when we talk about Skyrim later. So if you're thinking of buying this game, just keep those in mind. It's still Doom. I still think Doom 2016 was the best game that came out that year, if you don't include Into the Gungeon, but that's another story, which is also coming out on the Switch. Just keep those in mind. And also, the one thing you won't find in this version is Snap Map. So Snap Map is the like level editor that you get in every other version of Doom. It's just not in this version. You do get competitive multiplayer, but you don't get Snap Map, which is another reason why I think this game should have been discounted. Now, Skyrim. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about Skyrim because I've only put in an hour, maybe 2 hours. So,
Have you ever played it before?
Yeah, so that's actually what makes this weird. I played Skyrim at launch on PS3. I played it like to completion. I think I put 100 hours into Skyrim, and then I never picked it up again. I didn't even play any of the DLC that came out because I kind of, like, I got my share of the game at launch on PS3. So I've never been one of those people who, like, played Skyrim at 4K or played the remaster or used all the DLC and all the mods and everything. I know mods are a big thing. I just never got into that. So from my perspective, coming to the Nintendo Switch, it feels like it's a perfect transition. I played it on a controller. I'm on a controller basically again now with the Joy-Cons. Like, the game didn't look that great on PS3. It doesn't look that great on Nintendo Switch. So, like, I'm not missing anything. And it really feels like an absolutely... it feels like a great port. It's very true to the original game. So I'll have more information about that when I put more hours. But Skyrim, again, I really don't think that they should have charged full price for that.
Oh,
the game is how old now? Yeah, it's full price, full AAA price. Overseas, it's $60, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's about $899 in South Africa. Jeez. I could be mistaken, but I'm not. I didn't look up the exact prices. That's a slap in the face, in my opinion. It really shouldn't have been so expensive.
Here's a question for you. How many times has Skyrim been ported?
Not as many as people think. Because we have, I think it's 4. So if you count the big major releases, we had the big original release, and then we had the remaster, and then we have Skyrim VR, which is actually, if you own Skyrim, you do not get Skyrim VR for free. That is a separate game. And now we have, if you count the Switch ports and the like PS4 and Xbox One ports, you could increase that number. But yeah, it's been everywhere. It's been out for so long. I really don't think it was on to charge so much for this game. I really think if you're someone who put a lot of hours into Skyrim on other platforms and you're thinking, nah, I really want it on the go, I think you should wait for a sale. I don't think they should have charged so much.
Yeah, I mean, that for me is like the sticking point here is that like, these are now old games that are coming to Switch. And granted, they had to be ported and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, how much is it really going to take for you to port a game, the original Skyrim that was released all those years ago, and place it on the Switch? I mean, I'm not saying that the PS3 and the Switch were identical in terms of specs, but, I mean, you're able to play HD games on the Switch. You know, I don't know. I like you, Clinton. I really think that they should have maybe brought it out at a discounted price, especially for people that are looking to get it, especially for playing on the go.
Yeah. And another thing is this, right?
And another thing.
Looking past the price, you have to think of the market, right? think of what's the other big RPG on the Nintendo Switch? It's the Legend of Zelda. Yeah. Everyone says that's like maybe the best game ever made. A lot of people are saying it's their favorite game that's ever been made. A lot of people are saying it's the best game on the Switch, bar none. And if you're charging the same for your really old game that's a port, like they're selling like hotcakes. I wasn't going to say like, oh, think about the money they're losing. But like you're going up against that game. Like you cost the same and you're both RPGs. I really think it should have been less. So I just looked it up. Doom is 670 rand on the Nintendo eStore, which is a lot. I mean, I think I saw it for cheap as 200 or 150 on PC. Skyrim is 670, same price. And L.A. Noire is... These are local prices. If you're listening overseas, I think these are all $60 games. And L.A. Noire, 700 rand.
Hmm.
For old games. Doom's not old, but the other two are.
Yeah.
If they really should have been $30, maybe $40 games. If they did that, I would have been much less harsh on them because of the price. But the thing is, if you go to charts on the Nintendo eStore, all three of those games are selling really well. So Skyrim is actually number one on the charts right now, ahead of Rocket League, which is half the price, and Mario Odyssey, which is the same price. So what do I know?
Okay, folks.
I'll have a roundup of all of those, but there'll be links below the podcast.
Cool. That's going to do it for this edition of the HTXT Africa podcast. Before we start going... HTXT podcast, rather. Before we start going into the hour-long territory. Thanks so much for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. From myself, Brendan Lush, cheerio. From Nick Cowan.
Cheerio.
And from Clinton Matos.
See you, everybody.
We'll see you next week. Cheers.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.